Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's June 9th. We've got 56 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City, Heber City up to 59 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back as we go into your Monday. We're looking at lots of sunshine as we move throughout the day. Just a couple of high clouds building up in the afternoon. But overall, mostly sunny with a high UV index. That UV index will be around 10 as we go throughout most of this week. That means you need the sunscreen SPF 30 or greater. You could burn in less than 15 minutes each afternoon. Otherwise, your forecast with that sunshine calls for high temperatures climbing into the low 80s in Park City. We'll see our high temperatures climbing into the upper 80s for the Heber Valley. As we go into your Tuesday, look for more sunshine. Temperatures starting off in the upper 40s in the Heber Valley, starting off into the low to mid 50s in Park City. We'll see that sunshine allowing those temperatures to jump into the low 80s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the upper 80s in the Heber Valley. Again, we're looking at pretty much sunny skies out there and hot temperatures. As we get towards your Wednesday, a weak disturbance will move by to our north. That'll mean mostly sunny skies. Temperatures starting off in the low 50s across the area. But as we go throughout the afternoon on your Wednesday, we'll see a few more clouds building up. So we'll call it partly sunny skies. And then as we go throughout the afternoon, there will be that slight chance of an isolated shower or two popping up with that disturbance moving by. High temperatures will be climbing into the mid 80s in Park City. We're looking at high temperatures around 90 in the Heber Valley, but it continues to get warmer, folks. That sunshine returns and we're going to get another big upper level ridge of high pressure building in. That means a lot of sunshine for your Thursday, Friday, and the Saturday and Sunday. But the difference is that will mean those temperatures will start to warm up even more than where they have been. So we're looking at high temperatures by the time we get towards your Thursday in the low 80s in Park City. We'll be in around 90 degrees for a high in the Heber Valley. And it gets even warmer heading into the weekend. Friday, lots of sunshine. Temperatures starting off around 50 degrees. We'll see those highs in the mid 80s in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the low 90s there in the Heber Valley. And it will continue to get warm as we go into the weekend there, as we're going to be looking at those temperatures climbing into the upper 80s as we get towards Park City for the weekend, with lots of sunshine and high temperatures climbing into the low to mid 90s in the Heber Valley with all that sunshine out there. So get ready for some warmer weather on the way. That's your latest forecast from the ABC 4 Weather Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Kay.
Thanks, Cedric. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Health Department Director Phil Bondurant with the latest on the measles outbreak and findings of the community health assessment. Park City Fire District Chief Pete Emery, along with Fire Marshal Mike Owens, discussing the recent fire restrictions put into place and a look ahead at the fire season. And finally, representatives of the Sunset Over Sunrise Chairlift fundraiser, including one of the artists, Peg Bodell, who's designing a chair on behalf of KPCW, have details on this week's fundraiser. Then stay tuned for Mountain Money. Today's guests include author Todd Purdom, who's got some explaining to do about his new book, Desi Arnaz, The Man Who Invented Television, a biography of the man that millions of TV viewers knew only as Ricky Ricardo and his innovations that changed television forever. And again, I'm going to disagree with that, because it was Lucille Ball who had the three-camera television shots. Then Lindsay Lovett Brown, Audrey Lind, and Allison Russell from Folklore Bookshop in Midway talk about their bookshop and all that's happening over there. And then find out why the UPS store changed locations just a few hundred yards south. All of that coming up on Mountain Money, of course, heard every Monday from 9 to 10. It's 8:10. Taking a look now at some local news. Summit County's new draft agreement with Dakota Pacific doesn't change what the development will look like, but it does change who's in charge. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports staff wants clarification on one particular section.
The primary change to the new development agreement is who can sign it on behalf of Summit County. That's the county manager, not the council chair. That also means County Manager Shane Scott, and not the council, has control over any changes to the contract. The changes reflect the rules laid out in Senate Bill 26, a new state law written specifically to get Dakota Pacific's project approved through an administrative process so it could avoid a referendum. Dakota Pacific applied under the new law Friday, May 30th, and KPCW obtained the application materials through a public records request Friday, June 6th. This is the company's second application to develop. The last one was approved by the county council in December and then challenged by thousands of residents who signed a referendum petition earlier this year. The county clerk invalidated dozens of signature packets, so the referendum may not appear on the November ballot. The clerk has until June 23rd to make a formal determination on that petition. The newest iteration of Dakota Pacific's application proposes 5 fewer county-owned affordable housing units than before, bringing the overall unit count down to 885. Community Development Director Peter Barnes says his office is reviewing the document and planners will need clarification on the section describing how and when units actually get built. In its review of that section, KPCW identified what appear to be typos, where the numbers of planned units are inconsistent. For example, the contract states, developer shall be entitled to apply for an additional 100 and in parentheses 150 residential units. The full document is at kpcw.org, and it's not final until it's signed. Scott, the county manager, says he couldn't speak to the specifics of the contract because he won't see it until the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission reviews it and makes a recommendation to him. He'll approve or deny the agreement after a public hearing. Under SB 26, county attorneys say Scott has limited discretion to deny the contract if it complies with the law. Residents could appeal Scott's ruling, but the new contract says Dakota Pacific reserves the right to develop what SB 26 says the company's entitled to, regardless. The county and developers' 50-50 split of the cost of new civic buildings and a mixed-use plaza with a pedestrian bridge, the public-private partnership, still applies. But Dakota Pacific is still to contribute no more than $3.7 million to that partnership, and the county picks up the rest. The new agreement also still includes a clause that says Summit County and Dakota Pacific will end a 2023 lawsuit over the last state law that sought to greenlight the development. Both sides would cover their own attorney's fees. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. I'm Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour in the studio now with an update from the Summit County Health Department. I have Director Phil Bondurant. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, let's start with the measles scare. Sounds like a Canadian was diagnosed with measles, making a trek to the Salt Lake area over Memorial Day. Anything come of it?
No, we learned about it the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend. And as you stated, that individual did fly through the Salt Lake County Airport, and as precaution, all local public health departments were notified by the state. And we just kept a really close eye on it because we know a lot of our residents travel. There's also a lot of people traveling to the area this time of year. So it was first mentioned in our Board of Health meeting by our nursing director, Derek Moss, just as a precaution or more so notification to our Board of Health, who has the right to know that their public health department, your public health department, is on top of things, and that this is truly a success of the local public health system in being aware, being alert, the notifications, the messaging, all the things that we hope and test were functional. And so while nothing has come of this, we are fairly confident that the system has been tested and is working the way that it should, so that in the event something does happen and it does hit the state of Utah or Summit County, we will be among the first to know.
Yeah. Now, the state said it decided not to do a health advisory or any public notices, saying they didn't want to, quote, create chaos. Did the state, though, miss an opportunity here by not encouraging people to go get vaccinated for those who are not?
Yeah. One of the things we really have a hard time with in public health is telling our story or being present and being in the front of messaging. And we learned in Summit County that it's extremely important to be transparent and to share what information we know, which is why we shared that. I can't speak to the state's reasoning behind that or the decisions they made, but anytime we can get out a message around something that's occurring locally in the state, occurring nationally, especially around immunizations, and share a message of why immunizations are important, we would want to do that. And that's the opportunity that we in Summit County took, is an opportunity to share with the board and the public that were in attendance about the importance of vaccinations, immunizations, and of course the reporting system.
All right, so what has the health department seen in terms of vaccinations, or with this measles discussion kind of, you know, low hum in the background here, are people coming in to get vaccinated, or, you know, that may not have been before?
We've seen a slight uptick in vaccinations. A lot of our interest right now is individuals calling to see if they can determine their vaccination status or receive guidance on where they can have their titers tested to see if they have adequate levels of immunization status around measles. We worked earlier this year to secure around 200 doses of MMR for anyone in the community that wants to be vaccinated. These doses are intended for those that are uninsured, and we would love to provide those vaccinations to children, adults, senior citizens. It doesn't matter, anybody that wants to be vaccinated. Of course, if you have insurance, we can work through that process as well, so it's no cost to the individual. But most importantly, we want anyone and everyone to know that we have vaccinations available, and we would never want there to be a barrier for someone to be vaccinated. So if you have questions, if there's an interest to be vaccinated, give us a call at 435-333-1500, and we'll find a way to get that vaccination to you and your family.
All right, and I don't recall the childhood immunization schedule, but when is that first dose of MMR?
It can be any time after 6 months is the first dose of MMR.
And is it just one dose? Is it a one and done, or is there a couple?
Yeah, so it's a two-part series. The first one is done any time after 6 months, which provides around 91 to 93% immunity. And that second one is really where it puts it over the top, and you get close to 97% immunity with that second dose of MMR. So there is a schedule at the state. We recommend that if you have questions, go ahead and review that document. You can call our clinical staff at the health department. They are experts in this field. They've answered a lot of questions around this and can provide guidance to individuals. And of course, our primary care physicians are an excellent resource as well.
All right, the department got back the findings from the CHA, the community health assessment. This was a pretty intensive process. You let it run longer than you had originally thought just to try and get more responses. So you're pleased with the outcome?
Yeah, absolutely. Our epidemiologist, Nancy Porter, did a lot of back-end work to figure out where we needed to be. And we had a goal of 1,000 surveys, which exceeded the power analysis, so the number of responses we needed to make the report statistically viable. We hit nearly 1,700 responses. Out of this assessment, we've learned some things that we already knew and that the community validated for us, and then we learned things that we didn't know. One of the greatest successes that has come out of this community health assessment is it's been shared with us across multiple different agencies that this is the first assessment or report that provides a real hard number for our LGBTQ community. It allows us to provide population estimates for this community or for this for these individuals in our community, which helps us make decisions based on what we want to do to improve health in our community, where we should allocate resources, and where we should focus our funding. So having that information in hard, fast numbers through some really strong estimates, we feel as though we have a better grasp on where our programming can go to make sure that everyone in our community is represented when we look at some of our health programming.
So you had never asked the question before?
It has never been asked before in a community health assessment. We've received from other groups around the community that are really data-focused or data-centric, that they are using the same information as they look to provide guidance and direction on their programming. They're using the results of the community health assessment.
Okay. Any other outcomes that you were surprised by or found interesting?
Yeah, when we look at what our community across Park City, South Summit, North Summit school districts reported, we learned that there's alignment on the three community factors that they believe make Summit County a healthy community. The first is access to trails and outdoor recreation. The second is crime rate and safe neighborhoods, or that the low crime rate equals safe neighborhoods, and then a clean environment. Those are all things that we know and that we love about the Wasatch Back. And it's good to know that our community is aligned on that as well. And what that information allows us to do is we seem to have had some success there. So now we can focus on the second part of the community health assessment, areas where we can improve. And we learned that affordable housing, elder care options, affordable food options, those things are all important and community factors that need improvement. Well, we're happy to report that there's work being done on affordable housing. There's probably room to improve on elder care options. But what it does is it allows us to also identify the areas that were ranked fairly low that we can spend our time and resources on. For me, the things that stood out were the low rate of vaccinations or immunizations, the climate in our environment, the things that we can see changing around us. And then one that's in the silver, or in between the lines, the silver lining is the social isolation component of our community. And that's not one that we talk about a lot, but it's one that to me, as I read through this, seemed to ring out and really catch my attention. So it's things that we'll be talking about here at the end of this week around our community health improvement plan.
Okay, so how long does that take to put together then?
Well, we've been working on it now for about a month, and we have hired a professional moderator to help get us through this process, and it's a two-day retreat-style effort with about 30 people from the community that are gonna read into the community health assessment. We're giving them some homework, and they'll come ready on Thursday and Friday to talk about the goals and objectives that we would want to see as a health department that we can begin focusing our funding and our efforts on.
Okay, any kind of things that rose to the top here and concern you?
There's always concern when we have blind spots. And one of the things I think that continues to make me nervous is the slowly increasing cancer rates and the lack of screening options that pop up. We have learned in recent legislative efforts and news efforts or news reports that radon continues to be the number two cause of lung cancer, only second to cigarette smoke. And when we look at our radon numbers here in Summit County, they are high. They exceed that threshold that we would normally take action. And then we look at things like melanoma and skin cancers or breast cancer, the different cancers that are we can screen for, yet we're not taking advantage of those opportunities to be screened or to be evaluated. So that to me is always concerning, and one thing that you'll see a lot of focus on this coming fall. We have some events that we'll be able to report out on later, big cancer screening events, cancer awareness events, and those are things that I would like to see a lot more effort and some focused funding on for us at Summit County Health Department, and I think the staff would agree based on what we're going to see this fall.
Yeah. Well, recently, was it the health department that did the melanoma screening?
It was, and we're going to replicate that this fall as well. So, yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay. And then I know that one of the reports that we did was the drop in vaccination rates, especially for the flu vaccine. Any concern about that?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime that we have proven vaccines available that limit sickness or illness, or at least lighten the symptoms that come along with those, and we're not seeing an increase in uptake or we're seeing that decline, I would have to take responsibility for that and say that's a failure of the public health system. We have not done a good job of combating the false information or the misinformation, I should say, and we haven't done a good enough job of really sharing the benefits in a way that people can understand, that it's digestible, and that they can really weigh that decision. And a lot of times when we talk to people on the phone, one-on-one, and are able to share what's accurate and correct, we don't know that we necessarily convert them to being immunized or vaccinated, but it provides a better sense of understanding and I guess awareness around what vaccines do, the safety of them, the testing behind them, and the different benefits that they offer our community.
Yeah, I think that something that jumped out at me was that a fifth of those surveyed say that they question vaccine safety. So that's still out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, with the advent of social media and different platforms where individuals can share information that's not necessarily vetted or that is academically proven, it's really easy to fall down that rabbit hole of what is accurate and not accurate. And again, I think it's a failure of the public health system in general to find an effective way to compete with that misinformation, but also to get information out in a format that people can truly understand and allow them to make the best decisions.
Yeah. Any concern over the federal guidelines now that children and pregnant women no longer receive the COVID vaccines?
Yeah, I'm not necessarily as concerned about the recommendation as I am the process that it went through. So those recommendations have been shared in the UK for the last 2 years, and that's how the UK has presented their recommendations around the COVID vaccine. But what is more concerning to myself is that the process in which those recommendations have been made in the past was circumvented under the new administration. Generally, there's the ACIP, which is the immunization collective of virologists, immunologists, really strong professionals that have dedicated a career to making these recommendations, that then provide their recommendation to the CDC, and the CDC generally makes that call under this process. And as far as I understand it, and the way that it has rolled out, is that system that has been put in place, it was very successful during the COVID years, has not been utilized in this case. And so we have a recommendation coming out. We have manufacturers that are kind of sitting in limbo, wondering what it is going to be. Are they going to produce a COVID vaccine? Because if the vast majority of the population is not recommended for it, most likely won't be covered by insurance, and people would be forced to pay out of pocket. In the past, we've learned that they are expensive vaccines. Through the great support of our county council and through some state grants, we've been able to cover the cost of that for individuals. But if that recommendation remains as it is right now, the funding for that will not cover the cost of what the vaccines are, roughly $120 a piece for those that are not within the recommended group. I think given some of the information that's been made available, it looks like it will still go through this process to some degree, but again, we're kind of behind the eight ball because generally those recommendations and considerations are being made as we speak.
Okay. Want to just real quickly hit on the fact that it's still runoff season and people need to be careful about running water.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, last month you gave us the opportunity to talk about private wells and the testing that the health department offers. And this month we'd like to expand on that and talk a little bit about water safety when we're out recreating in our reservoirs, our lakes, our rivers, and playing in the irrigation water. Those are all important summertime activities for our children. Obviously, we want them to be safe. We also want them to be healthy. And river water, lake water, canal water is not intended to be drank. And I know that seems as though we probably shouldn't have to say that, but we learned last year, or maybe a year, 2 years ago, of the E. coli outbreak down in Utah County from children ingesting canal water. And while we as parents and adults understand that you don't drink those from those water sources directly, that's not always a first thought for children. So obviously if you're skiing and you fall off the skis or you jump out of the boat and you get a little bit of water, that's not as much of a concern as if we're directly drinking from those sources. So anytime you're out playing in the water, make sure that before you go to eat, you wash your hands or at least use some sanitizer, clean those hands up. We don't want individuals playing in the water, drinking it. It's okay to use on your gardens, those types of things. That's not a concern. We all wash our veggies before we use them when they come out of the garden. But it's mainly that direct ingestion that comes from playing in those sources. We just ask you to keep an eye on those kids as you're out there doing that, those summer activities that we all enjoy. We don't want you to stop those, but just keep an eye on them. Make sure we're not drinking that water.
Okay, and Men's Mental Health Month, I guess we're calling it out because men tend not to get the help that they may need?
Yeah, I think it's a great awareness or a great effort for the month of June with it being Father's Day. Men face some unique challenges. 1 in 4 men experience mental health issues in their lifetime but are 5 times less likely to seek help. Men in Utah die by suicide nearly 4 times the rate of women. And that's due to work stress, financial problems, substance abuse, aging, all those things that we all experience. But in the state of Utah, those tend to build up and weigh a little bit more heavily on men, causing that increased rate of suicide. So as it's Father's Day, we just encourage you to check in on your husbands, your grandfathers, your dads, your brothers, friends, sons, everybody, that just check in on them, and hopefully we can begin to break down the walls around that stigma of just toughing it out, or it comes with the territory of being a man, but recognizing that men are highly susceptible to mental health concerns, and that as tough as we want to be, we're not that tough. So.
Okay, and people can reach out to the health department to get more resources, information about resources?
Yeah, absolutely. They have the National Crisis and Suicide Line, the 988. You can call or text 988. from anywhere, pretty much, I think, in the world. I know definitely anywhere in the U.S. We have the Safe Utah app, which is real-time crisis report or support for students, families, men. Doesn't matter the time of year or what month it is, what the message for the month is. And then there's the USI Prevention Coalition as well. You can reach out to the health department again at 435-333-1500. We can immediately put you in touch with mental health professionals. And the other neat thing is here, specific to Summit County or unique to Summit County, is that through our behavioral health program, all of our law enforcement officers, those that respond, are trained in how to deal with mental health concerns for those individuals they might be working with. So we are a well-equipped community, a well-equipped county to deal with mental health issues, mental health struggles, but most importantly, helping people get back on track by getting the services they need.
Okay. Final question. Just what's the latest with the funding updates? Do you know anything? I mean, I guess you're waiting for the big, beautiful bill to be passed?
Yeah, I think we're waiting to see what exactly is going to happen from a timeline perspective. I did read over the weekend that President Trump is strongly encouraging Congress to have the bill passed by July 3rd. That would be remarkable. I think it would be out of the ordinary if it met that deadline. As you know, we've been working or operating on continuing resolutions for quite a while now. For Congress to pass an actual budget in such a short timeline, a couple of weeks out from now, is a little bit scary. We've known that there will be amendments made as it goes through the process, but by all indications, I don't know that the amendments are going to benefit public health dramatically. The only true, positive that's coming out of this is that the American Health Administration, the AHA, was given a very substantial budget, three times the CDC's budget, and of that $18 million or so dollars, 14 of it, or excuse me, billion, $14 billion of it is in discretionary funding. Now, we've heard rumors that they're going to move to a block funding type model based off of what we talked about earlier, the CHA and the CHIP. That will take some time to implement, but we're keeping our fingers crossed that through this new Making America Healthy Again initiative, that we will see some block grant funding come down through that $14-15 billion in the form of block grants to local public health. So we're continuing to move forward, do the things we have done in the past. Our county council, I presented to them on Wednesday, and in true fashion, they continue to support us, Shane and Jana the same way, and committed to making sure that for those essential and necessary programs for the community, that they would step up and do their part to continue to support us, and I'm grateful for that support.
Yeah, are you still looking at that kind of 40%?
I think that's kind of the indication that myself and colleagues around the state, individuals I know nationally, that's what we're kind of projecting right now. At least that's the way the big, beautiful bill is written. And so we'll plan for the worst and hope for the best.
Okay, Phil, talk to you next month. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Health Department Director Phil Bondurant. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KBCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we've reported, Summit County has issued fire restrictions to prepare for extreme fire danger this season. In the studio with details, I have Park City Fire District Chief Pete Emery, along with Fire Marshal Mike Owens. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Pete, what determines extreme fire danger?
Well, you know, that's a good question. That's why I brought Mike here with me.
Okay, Mike.
So when we look at speaking specifically about wildland fuels or wildland fires, when we look at extreme fire conditions, we look at the potential for fire spread. If someone starts if someone were to start a fire today, we're going to have a little bit more risk of the fire spreading quickly and faster than we can put it out than we did, say, 2 or 3 weeks ago when it was very wet. So we look at the fuel moisture, we look at the winds, and we look at the temperature and the humidity.
All right, so at this point, there is no moisture.
There's not a lot. There's still some out there. You know, you look up at the hillside, and it's nice, and it's that beautiful green that we love to see. As the summer moves on, it's going to start to turn brown and yellow, and that's when we know we're starting to lose more and more fuel. Another big deal, and this is something that everyone can see, is that when you walk out in your morning and you see dew on the grass, that usually means we're doing okay. When you don't see the dew, things are getting a little worse.
Hmm. All right. So the restrictions, maybe you want to run through those. What does it mean?
Sure. There's two sets of restrictions that we're looking at, or that have been enacted. One is within the city limits of Park City, and one is outside of the city limits of Park City within the boundaries of the Park City Fire District. The restrictions outside of the Park City limits are already in effect. And basically they say that if you're doing anything that has the potential to start a fire, you probably shouldn't be doing it unless you're meeting some certain conditions. For example, people are welcome to have, let's call them recreational fires in established fire pits as long as there's running water present on public or on private property. If you're in a campground, then you can also have fires in those established fire pits. Outside of that, there's not a lot you can do.
Yeah, so do you need some kind of state approval in order to institute these restrictions?
We do, and I'll let Chief Emery talk about that. He's the one that went through most of that process.
Yeah, so the Park City Fire District split almost, you can look at it in two. We have Park City Municipal, and Park City Municipal is able to do their own ordinance, so they don't have to go through the state forester. Our unincorporated area, Snyderville Basin area, we have to go through the state forester. So we wrote a letter, we got the county council on board with us, agreed to what we wanted to do, and then that went down to the state forester last week, and they approved it for those restrictions, very similar to what Parks and Municipal did. So we're in a good place there. Some of the other things that I'm concerned about are, obviously the dry weather, but also our federal resources. And we're not sure what kind of help we're going to get, and it's somewhat of a mixed bag of what we're hearing. But that adds to this. We have our partners in North and South Summit Fire District. Depending on what they're dealing with up in the Uintas, we'll be backing them up and as well as helping up there. But that's also part of this. That fire we had in Parley's in
21,
thank you. We had a huge amount of federal resources there that really got us into position. We were able to stop that in over 3 or 4 days. Today, I'm not quite sure what we're going to get. And that's part of this. That's why I wanted to be very vigilant with this, that what we're going to get out of the feds, we're just not sure.
Yeah, so do the restrictions have to come from a district? Or, why can't just the county council issue the restrictions for the entire county?
I don't have the exact answer for that. Mike might.
So a lot of it has to do with state law. In the state of Utah, cities have a tremendous amount of power to govern what happens within their cities. Counties have much less power, and a lot of that authority rests at the state level. So in the case of Summit County and these restrictions that are in place here within the Park City Fire District, we had to go to the state forester because the state forester is the one with the authority to issue those orders.
Okay. And speaking of the Summit Park fire, we had another car vehicle on fire this morning. You guys keeping your eye out on that?
Yeah, we are keeping our eye on that. And we were I was just looking at those numbers last week, and I think what we saw over the last 3 or 4 years, we had 37 incidents, and I guess now we have 38. Actually, 39. We had another fire on Friday, I want to say, just a much smaller one. And what we're really looking at doing is really mitigating. So the advantages that we had with that Parley's fire is that it now has created a buffer for us. There's not as much to burn now going into Park City. That being said, above that, there's still a fair amount of fuel. Park City Fire, we're working right now with UDOT to start trying to mitigate that 5 feet off of I-80 all the way from Lambs up to the summit. We're working on that as we speak, just because, just like today, car catches fire, and obviously people pull over to the right into the grass, and we have really steep hillsides that fire can just make a run. So that's something that we're really working hard on. It's why we have the chipping program. But mitigation's huge, and we're going to try and really look hard at I-80 in the next few weeks, seeing if we can at least buy us a little bit more time before it gets into that urban interface.
Yeah, what do? Do you have to bring a big old mower, or what do you, yeah?
Yeah, we're working with UDOT. They do mowers, and we may cut some trees and all that. We're really working through them. They have to permit for us, but that's something I believe we're going to probably get launched in the next few weeks, and something we're going to continue to do from now on.
Okay. And how do vehicles even catch on fire? I know there's lots of fluids and heat involved in it, but is it that cars are overheating, or is it something else?
The vast majority of vehicles don't catch on fire. So, that's just statistically speaking, we're sitting pretty good on this one. car fires generally come into one of two categories. So like you said, there are a lot of fluids in the car. A lot of them are petroleum-based. Oil does not catch on fire easily. It takes quite a bit of heat for that to happen, but gasoline does. So gasoline fires are one of the major causes, just if you have a leak in the system somewhere. And then the other very common cause is electrical. So if you have an electrical short of some sort that's grounding out to the vehicle, it creates a point where things start to get hot, and then the fire will spread from plastics to rubber to whatever else.
And the other, you know, safety shout out is make sure you have chains and everything tied down that they're not causing that spark. Again, remember that fire in Parley's we had, that was, you know, the thought was a catalytic converter spark through that one. So sparks are huge. You know, make sure your loads are tied down, not only for safety, but to make sure we don't have any fires.
Yeah, we saw the same thing in Tollgate, right, with a truck kind of hitting a rock. Yeah,
exactly, yep.
Yeah. So in terms of restrictions, means no fireworks for the rest of the summer, basically, or at least July, right? That's when we would have fireworks.
Mike can speak to that.
That is correct. So fireworks are out. And you know, fireworks are really only allowed in the state of Utah during a very specific time to begin with. So what is restricted here is consumer-grade fireworks. Those are fireworks that people will be setting off on their own. And that is throughout until these orders are rescinded. Commercial fireworks shows will be allowed to continue. A lot of the reason for that is because when those commercial fireworks shows happen, there are a tremendous amount of safety precautions that are taken. If at any time during that show or before that show it's determined that it's not going to be safe or there's a potential for a wildfire, then the show is shut down. So that there is that allowance, and people will still see their fireworks on the 4th of July as of now.
Okay. Well, any efforts on a statewide basis to outlaw personal fireworks and just leave it for the professionals? We know it's getting hotter. As a result, it's getting drier. I mean, at some point, does somebody just need to step up and say, look, this isn't a good thing?
Yeah, I think I can't speak to state level, but I think that's what you're seeing here is, you know, we have three ski resorts. We have this huge tourism. It's just not worth it. We're Mike and I are obviously both firefighters. We don't like fire. So we really have to focus on our local level. And I don't know if there's a lot of drive for that at the state level. I'm just not sure.
This is a conversation that comes up every year at the state, and it's usually driven by municipalities and local fire agencies. It's an ongoing conversation, and every year we seem to make a little bit more progress on it. The ability for us to request these restrictions to be put into place is a tremendous step forward. We didn't have that in the past, so this is very nice to have now.
Okay. Wanted to ask about the no open fires. So basically, can we use our back deck propane fire?
So it depends on where you are. If you are within the city limits of Park City, you have to get a permit from the Park City Building Department. It's easy to get. You apply for it. They send someone out to take a look at what you're doing to make sure that what you're doing is within the safety requirements of the device that you're using, and then you get your permit and you're just fine. Outside of the city limits of Park City, you can continue to use your backyard fire pits, whether they be gas or whether they be solid fuel. Just keep in mind that if a fire does start as a result of that, you will be held responsible for it. And the state has been incredibly aggressive on following through on those.
Okay. And then how long do the restrictions remain in place? I mean, will they go throughout the summer? Or if we have a good monsoon season, July, August, would they be lifted? Or
Park City's restrictions, their ordinance was written to have the restrictions in effect through October 31st. The restriction that was put in place by the state forester is indefinite, so it's until it's rescinded. And we usually see those rescinded somewhere in the November-December time period.
Yeah. So what happens? I mean, and who's checking if somebody is found to violate these restrictions? Is it the fire department that's out there?
You know, Leslie, this is something that I bring up every time we're here, and I absolutely love our community. We have a vigilant community who's aware of what's going on. They are interested in the safety of, and they're interested in wildfire around us. And so normally what happens is when a neighbor sees something, they give us a call or they call 911 and report it. It is the responsibility of the sheriff's department within Summit County to enforce the fire restrictions, and it's the responsibility of the police department here in Park City.
Okay. As Pete mentioned, the chipping program still in effect. Do you have room left?
Absolutely. We will continue to take registrations throughout the summer. We anticipate closing near the end of September. That may be moved up just depending on how things work out. But we, if people get on our website right there on the front page, there's a big brown button that says wood chipping program. They can register their pile there.
Okay. Anything else, guys, you wanted to mention?
Just go back to what I said earlier about our community. We live in such a great place, and I really appreciate the vigilance of the members of our community.
Okay. Pete?
No, I'll echo Mike, please. Just stay vigilant this summer. Make sure we keep our community safe and as well as our firefighters, please. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, guys. That's Park City Fire District Chief Pete Emery along with Fire Marshal Mike Owens. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, if you've ever wanted to own a bit of ski history, then don't miss this week's Sunset on Sunrise chairlift auction at the base of Canyons Village. In the studio with details, I have Vail Resorts Director of Community and Government Affairs, Sarah Huey, the Vice President of Development for the Park City Community Foundation, Alexis Brown, and artist Peg Bodell. She's one of a dozen artists participating in the fundraiser. She's designing the KPCW chairlift. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Hey. Thank you, Leslie.
Sarah, let's start with you and tell us what's happening. It's happening Wednesday.
That's right. It's this Wednesday from 3 to 6 in Canyons Village. We have a very special event that brings together multiple things that make Park City special: our ski culture, our arts, and our nonprofit community. It's the Sunset on Sunrise live chairlift auction. So as you know, Leslie, we are in the final phase of replacing the old two-seater Sunrise chairlift with a 10-passenger gondola that will go up to the Red Pine area. And as we're retiring the two-seater chairlift, we partnered with the Arts Council of Park City and Summit County to identify 12 local artists to transform 12 of these two-seater chairs into unique works of art, inspired by 12 of our nonprofit partners and the theme that we gave them, What Community Means to Me. So this Wednesday, June 11th in Canyons Village, we'll be hosting a live auction of 12 of these one-of-a-kind chairs to raise money for nonprofits in the community. It's one of our first events of the summer. It's free and open to the public. We'll have live music from the Will Baxter Trio beginning at 3 in the Canyons Village Forum, and then the live auction will begin in the 4 o'clock hour. So an all-around great family fun outdoor, like I said, free and open to the public. There will also be delicious food and drinks and a great time to support our nonprofits.
Okay, well, KPCW is honored to be chosen as one of those 12 to receive a chair. But how did you choose the lucky nonprofits?
Well, that's a great question, Leslie. We support a number of nonprofits here in the Park City community, and we're proud to continue to build meaningful partnerships with a diverse range of nonprofit organizations that focus on our community's most pressing needs, that include social services, mountain access, early childhood education, which Alexis will talk about, and environmental conservation. So KPCW is one of those, as well as, if you don't mind, I'm going to list these off because I know people are passionate about their favorite nonprofits here. So if you love any of these nonprofits, come on down on Wednesday. We'll have chairs auctioned to benefit the Christian Center of Park City, the Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History, Live Like Sam, the National Ability Center, Park City Education Foundation, Peace House, People's Health Clinic, Recycle Utah, SOS Outreach, Summit Land Conservancy, and Youth Sports Alliance. That was in alphabetical order, in addition to KPCW. And then for the remaining chairs, there will be a silent auction that we're hosting online, beginning also on Wednesday through June 20th, that will benefit the Early Childhood Alliance through the Park City Community Foundation.
Okay, so how many other chairs are there?
About 40.
Okay, great. Alexis, tell us a little bit about how the Community Foundation is involved in this.
So we, as Sarah mentioned, are the very lucky recipient of those remaining chairs, and the proceeds from them will benefit our Early Childhood Alliance. So Park City Community Foundation, our charge is really to help address the greatest challenges here in Park City and Summit County, early childhood being one of them that just has risen to the top and stayed at the top, just access for our working families to high-quality, affordable child care. And so our Early Childhood Alliance benefits families from the prenatal stage through age 3. And so these remaining 40 will be up on the site, be open for, you know, that 10 days or so, and all of those funds will then benefit that critical initiative of ours that Park City Mountain and Epic Promise have been fantastic supporters of throughout the years, in addition to all of these other wonderful nonprofits and causes that Sarah mentioned. Going back to 2 years ago, we had a gondola auction that raised over $400,000 for our Early Childhood Alliance, and so really this is, just feels like a beautiful continuation of that partnership with Park City Mountain and Epic Promise to be able to benefit really critical work in this community.
Yeah, so the Community Foundation is kind of managing the online auction site then? Is that how it's working?
So luckily, actually, Park City Mountain and Epic Promise, they are managing the site and will make that contribution to our work as soon as we wrap up on June 20th, which actually, conveniently, we're kind of capped by two wonderful community events here. Our Summer Solstice Happy Hour is being held on June 20th, and so that will be kind of the last chance to bid on the silent auction for those remaining about 40 chairs. And so we'll hopefully have someone from the Park City Mountain team hopping up on stage to say, and this is the amazing impact we've been able to make from our silent auction that will then go to early childhood.
Yep, absolutely. That June 20th Park City Community Foundation summer kickoff is also in Canyons Village on June 20th. So it's, as Alexis said, it's two great end caps to what we hope will be a great fundraiser for the Early Childhood Alliance. Details for these events can be found at parkcitymountain.com. And if you go to our events page, you can navigate to where you can pre-register both for the live auction this Wednesday and that silent auction for the remaining chairs that will close on Friday the 20th.
Okay. Now, the other 40 chairs, they just come as a chair, right? They're not welded onto a stand, or am I incorrect?
No, that's correct. Mm-hmm. You can do with them whatever your vision drives.
Okay. Peg wanted to bring you into the fact. You have been recruited to paint the chair for KPCW. Thank you very much. People who have been on Sweet Alley the last couple of weeks probably have seen you down there on the Bob Wills Plaza painting away. So tell us about your design. What have you done?
Well, you know, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for the opportunity to these two groups, because it's real easy for an artist to just hibernate in our studios and never come out. It's great that they're offering this to us. So I speak for the other 12 artists, I'm sure. That being said, there are some challenges in trying to paint a lift chair because there's not a whole lot there, and I don't have the welding skills that some of my fellow artists have, like Kelly Gallagher. Oh my goodness, I looked at hers and thought, I've got to really up my game. So added some surprises to it as I go along. And I think it's going to be really fun. I think all of these are going to have a wow factor, that as you're walking along, you wow, how did they do that? Or I want that in my front room. I want that in my bathroom, in my bedroom, whatever. I think it's really going to be something that people are going to take away and remember for a long time. So I'm using my own artistic style, and hopefully people will be able to enjoy that. And I'm actually putting some pillow cushions, and this is a spoiler for most people. I'm putting some pillow cushions with my original artwork on them. So anxious to see how that goes over, and actually just really happy to be able to come to the party on Wednesday and see the whole community show up. I think it'll be great.
Yeah, you got some solar lights on yours, but tell us the title of it.
I haven't even thought of that yet. Oh, why don't you think of a title?
Well, told me Four Seasons.
Well, we were looking at the Four Seasons, yes, and so it will definitely go that direction. It does show all the seasons of Park City. It's a mountain scene, basically, going from the dark sky and the stars all the way down to the roots and the earth and a little bit of poppies and things like that. So, yeah, it will make you feel Park City.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, I mean, there's not a lot of painting
Surface.
Yeah. Yes. Have you seen any of the others?
I've looked on the website, so there is a link that you can go to. Do you have that, Sarah?
From parkcitymountain.com, just click on our events page in the top menu, and you will see a link directly to this event page.
And there's photos that are kind of in-progress photos. I think that they'll all still have that surprise at the end. When you get there and you see them on Wednesday, Annalie Moore did a panel and attached a panel to the back of it. And I'm thinking, well, why didn't I think of that one? Because that solved a lot of problems. So they're all going to be very, very different. And of course, my favorite, Fred Conlon, who has the snow monsters, in which I have four on my house, he's got snow monsters on his. These talented people who have welding skills, I think I'm going to take a welding class next.
Yeah, Kimball, I think, used to offer one.
Kelly Gallagher teaches it, so yes, I am.
Yeah. Any idea how much the chairs are going to go for? I mean, it's an auction, anybody's guess, right? Is there a minimum?
Do you want to talk about the buy now?
Yeah, so I think for, you know, popping just one step ahead to our silent auction, bidding will start at $500, but we have a buy now price of $5,000, which we've, you know, kind of started teasing that the silent auction will be going up, and we do have some interest. And really, if you extrapolate that, that's amazing support for our organization at least. And I think for the silent auction, the hope would be, you know, even more, because as you know, we listened to Peg talk about just now, the hope would be is that they really go.
When we did the Moose back in the 80s and 90s, of course, there were only three nonprofits at the time that were going after those funds. But I think mine's auctioned off for $24,000. I know Cranny's was the high one at 30 something. So yeah, we're looking forward to people getting out there and really outdoing the Joneses, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we sure appreciate your time, Peg.
You are so welcome.
And I know you're headed back down there.
I am.
Okay, and if people want to watch, they can come see the creative process happen again just down below the KPCW studio at the Bob Wills Plaza. Anything else you two wanted to mention?
Park City Mountain is open for summer. Our Adventure Park is open daily, and we'll have bike hall starting on Crescent and Red Pine Gondola this weekend.
Okay, summer season's here.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
And if you want any information about Park City Community Foundation's events, including our Summer Solstice Happy Hour, you can go to parkcitycf.org.
Okay. Sarah, Alexis, Peng, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.